From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Andrew Garcia, in today for Vicky Gonzalez. Election season is in full swing, with the primary just over 3 weeks away, and a crowded field of candidates is still vying to become California's next governor, which has led to some concerns among Democrats of getting boxed out ahead of the general. But there have been some shakeups in the race, a boost in support from one Democratic candidate to a new push to scrap the state's top two primary system altogether. At the same time, there's been a major shakeup in the national redistricting fight after the Virginia Supreme Court struck down new congressional maps approved by voters, which aimed to give Democrats an advantage, a decision that has left California lawmakers fuming after voters here passed Prop 50 last year. Joining us now to give us a rundown of all of these developments and more is Dustin Gardner, the co-author of Politico's California Playbook. Welcome back, Dustin.
Hey, Andrew. Good to be with you.
Well, this governor's race has been a messy contest at times, still with eight candidates vying for the top two positions in the primary. There's also concerns of Democrats potentially getting locked out, as I was saying, of the top two because of just how many candidates there are. But have feelings around that shifted in recent weeks?
I think that fear among Democrats has dissipated a bit. A couple months ago, there was not as clear of a Democratic front runner really at all. And that created the potential for Steve Hilton and Sheriff Chad Bianco, the two Republicans, to potentially advance. But in the last several weeks, after the implosion of Eric Swalwell's campaign, we've really seen Javier Becerra, the former Health and Human Services Secretary, in poll after poll, he has maintained a pretty strong lead over his fellow Democrats. He's around 20%, slightly above in some polls. And this is, a significant difference from earlier phases in the race when there was just no Democrat that was quite that high. It's not like the largest margin we've seen from a Democrat in a primary, but I think it does alleviate those fears to some degree. And also there's been a coalescing of Republicans around Steve Hilton. This came after President Donald Trump endorsed Hilton and, really kind of made him the Republican standard bearer in this race, and that has led support for Chad Bianco to trail off a bit. So I think a combination of Becerra's rise in the polls and Republicans coalescing around Steve Hilton has eased those fears a little bit, but it's not entirely off the table, though. I mean, you still are seeing party leaders like state party chair Rusty Hicks and others really wanting some of the lower polling Democrats to get out and pick one of the top maybe three Democrats. And so I think we'll still see some pressure around that, but I think the level of anxiety is going down.
Why do you think Javier Becerra has gained so much support over this relatively short amount of time emerging as that front runner?
Well, a lot of people have been surprised by how quickly he shot up in the polls. There was a lot of fanfare around some initial polling that showed him gaining traction, and his supporters had launched a very, very prominent social media campaign, touting him in the days after Swalwell got out of the race and resigned from Congress. And initially, I think a lot of us were skeptical, but then poll after poll has shown Becerra with that, pretty significant edge over Tom Steyer, Katie Porter, Matt Mahan, the other prominent Democrats in the race. And so I think it sort of speaks to a couple of things. I mean, this race has been very topsy-turvy with such a crowded field of so many prominent Democrats. There had been different discussions of would someone like, maybe a Kamala Harris get in, maybe Senator Alex Padilla, and none of those, top-tier candidates materialized. And then after the implosion of Swalwell, I think a lot of Democrats seem to be looking around and saying, okay, who's the experienced person we know on this ballot? And it seems a lot of them landed on Javier Becerra as the name they recognized, as someone who maybe seemed like kind of a safer, steady choice after a couple of ups and downs of potential names they were hearing that might be front runners in the race. And I think we also have to look at the ideological difference between Becerra and the others in the race. You have, billionaire climate activist Tom Steyer, who is really running sort of a Zohran Mamdani-esque campaign. He's making a lot of big, bold, progressive promises. And then you have Katie Porter, the former member of Congress from Orange County. She's also more progressive and is promising, like Steyer, to do things like create a state single-payer healthcare system. Becerra is the more centrist alternative to those two that are making these bold, kind of more progressive promises. And so I think, you know, that might also be part of it is Porter and Steyer are splitting a good chunk of that more progressive proportion of the state Democratic Party base. And Becerra's ending up with a lot of the Democrats who are maybe a little more centrist, a little more moderate, and nervous about, you know, making too dramatic of a pivot away from Gavin Newsom.
Well, there's been several debates between the leading candidates in recent weeks, and I can't help, Dustin, but think about playoff basketball. You know, as we get closer to the championship, as we get the stakes start rising, the championship being, I don't know, Election Day, you see some fights. Somebody got ejected yesterday from a game for throwing an elbow. It has seen in recent weeks at some of these debates that things have been getting a little bit more heated, a little bit more chippy. So if we keep taking this, you know, metaphor that's a bit of a stretch forward, have you been seeing the debates get a little bit more heated? And who are the candidates who are maybe trying to stand out and throw those proverbial elbows and taking shots at some of their fellow candidates?
Yes, let's run with your metaphor here. I think you are seeing a lot more technical fouls. It is like, you know, you're in the final minutes of at least the primary part of the game, and you're seeing especially in the last several debates, a lot more of the Democratic rivals pile on Javier Becerra, in particular because he, you know, has been gaining this lead in the polls. And so we're seeing folks like Tom Steyer, Katie Porter, attack him from the left on things like Becerra taking contributions from oil companies. He accepted a roughly $39,000 contribution from Chevron. Porter and Steyer are also hitting Becerra for his kind of squishy stance on single-payer health care. And Becerra is responded to these things by saying, you know, that he's committed to expanding health care, but he's more focused on getting as many people as possible insured and less focused on what you call the name of the program. And then on his contributions from oil companies, you know, he's made it clear that while he supports climate goals, he's going to be willing to talk to refineries and others in the state. And he's a lot more focused on maybe being willing to go to the negotiating table with some of those major corporate interests in Sacramento. And I think that's part of the reason more the Sacramento establishment seems to be gravitating toward Becerra. So, you know, those are some of the big attacks we've seen on him from the left. And he's always getting hit. He's also getting hit from the center. You have San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan, who's a very centrist, tech-aligned Democrat. He's hitting Becerra over his track record when Becerra was Health and Human Services Secretary, and there was a crisis with unaccompanied migrant children at the border. And Mahan is pointing to that, saying that, you know, maybe Becerra has a lot more experience, but he, you know, there maybe that experience wasn't the best indicator of competent management. And this whole crisis was dealing with unaccompanied minors who were assigned to sponsor hosts or sponsor families, and there was a lot of reporting when Becerra was in the Biden administration from the New York Times and other outlets pointing out how the government, you know, ultimately lost track of what happened to some of those children after they were placed with a sponsor, and some of them ended up, you know, in factories or other horrible situations. And Becerra has defended that by saying that, you know, he was responding to a crisis created by the Trump administration and tried to get minors that were in ICE detention facilities out of there as quickly as possible. And he's accused his Democratic rivals, including Mahan, of re-upping a Trump talking point on that front. But all in all, Becerra really has increasingly become the target at these debates. And the debates have, you know, overall not been the best moment for Becerra. He's struggled several times. In one recent forum on CNN, he repeatedly would not answer a yes or no question about whether he supported single-payer healthcare, but he's also managed to make it through these last several big debates without a type of viral moment that might cause his polling to dip significantly. But it has been a struggle for Becerra at times, definitely.
Yeah. You mentioned San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan, and we'll hear from him later on today in the show about his candidacy and the governor race so far. Somebody we haven't heard weigh in on the race as of yet is Governor Gavin Newsom. Last week, he declined to endorse any candidate in the governor's race. Does that come as a surprise, especially given how crowded this field is and with the primary less than a month away?
I'm not necessarily surprised because there isn't a clear longtime ally of the governor in this race. Had Alex Padilla or Kamala Harris got in the race, or maybe even State Attorney General Rob Bonta, who also briefly flirted with the idea, had one of those three more well-known sort of party standard bearers gotten in, I think we might have seen an earlier Newsom endorsement. But there isn't a clear Newsom ally in this field, at least not someone who's really close to the governor. So I think that partly explains it. And what is the incentive for the governor to endorse at this point? It doesn't seem like there's a lot of upside for him. But I will note a caveat to that is that a lot of the governor's allies have gravitated toward Javier Becerra, especially over the last month or so, after Eric Swalwell dropped out of the race. It seems like a lot of Newsom's longtime advisors and allies are either working directly with Becerra's campaign, or they're working on super PACs that are supporting Becerra or opposing Tom Steyer. And that really just kind of gives you an indication of where a lot of the institutional establishment in Sacramento is at in this race. And I think in Sacramento, a lot of those Newsom allies, interest groups, and other institutional players, they do see Becerra as being a sort of more of a continuation of Newsom. There's more policy continuity between the two of them, whereas Tom Steyer is making these big progressive promises, or Katie Porter, is less known in Sacramento. So the two of them, Porter and Steyer, are more of a wild card to the establishment in Sacramento.
Some of the frustration and concerns among California Democrats in this governor's race can be attributed to the fact that the state has that top two primary system where the top two candidates, regardless of party, move on to the November general. But there's a push right now to try and change that. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's going on with that effort?
So there's been a concern for months, as we mentioned at the top, from Democrats that were worried about two Republicans advancing from the primary and being on the ballot in November. Even though that appears unlikely, especially at this point, it still caused a lot of heartburn in Democratic circles, and that led a group of longtime strategists in Sacramento, led by Steve Maviglio, a veteran consultant in town. They launched just over the weekend this effort to get rid of the top two ballot initiative. But this will not appear on the ballot, most likely until November 2028. They would still have to get the signatures and go through the qualification process. It's too late for it to affect this year's primary, and most likely too late for it to appear on the ballot this year. But again, this situation, this cycle with all the uncertainty for Democrats, caused so much heartburn that you have the party wanting to look, some in the party wanting to look at making this change. But I will note the jungle primary system that we have in California, this top two of any party advancing. Most in the past, when it has caused, led to a situation where you have two candidates from the same party appearing on the November ballot after the primary, more often than not, it's been Democrats that are benefiting from having two Democratic choices. And so I'll be interested to see down the road, given this, won't be on the ballot or wouldn't be on the ballot if it gains momentum for a couple of years. I'll be curious down the road to see how much Democrats are still worried about this, or if the anxieties of this gubernatorial primary might feel like a distant memory in a year and a half or 2 years.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Politico's Dustin Gardner. Okay, Dustin, last week there was a major decision from the Virginia Supreme Court, which struck down a new congressional map approved by voters that aimed to secure more Democratic seats in this year's elections. California passed Prop 50 last year as part of a larger redistricting fight playing out across the country. How are lawmakers here responding to the Virginia decision, and where does California now fit in this national redistricting landscape?
Well, Democrats here are awfully depressed about it. You had Gavin Newsom taking to Twitter after the Virginia Supreme Court ruling, and Assembly Speaker Robert Rivas, basically just saying how sort of, in their words, disgusted and ashamed they were of the process. And ultimately, the situation is, despite California's big effort that Gavin Newsom and others got a lot of credit for within the Democratic Party, now after the rollback of a key provision of the Voting Rights Act, it looks like Republicans are going to gain more ground in the national redistricting war, especially with all these southern states from Tennessee to, you know, Missouri, Alabama, Florida, all these southern states that are now rushing these late redraw gerrymanders of their maps to favor Republicans. It really cuts into the ground that Democrats thought they were gaining with Proposition 50 in California. And overall, it doesn't seem like the national redistricting wars have worked out that well for Democrats, especially in light of these last couple of court rulings that kind of changed the rules of the game.
Well, Dustin, thanks so much for taking us through all of the California state politics and beyond. We'll no doubt be hearing from you again soon as the primary marches on. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dustin Gardner is the co-author of Politico's California Playbook and has been getting us up to speed on the latest in state politics. Up next, we'll listen to Vicky's interview with San Jose Mayor Matt Mahan, one of the Democratic candidates running for governor. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Andrew Garcia.